Hey everybody, welcome back to the Blueprint. Today I'm really excited. We have a Texas native. She's got more scope and depth in the real estate markets than most people I've come across. And you guys know I'm a real estate guy. She's the co-founder of OmniKey Realty. They are not only an investment firm, they're property management. She is incredibly generous. I've seen her on YouTube, I've seen her on webcast. She's super generous with her knowledge and the nuggets that we're going to get today. You guys, Leah Slaughter. Leah, thanks for being here. Really appreciate your time. I know it's valuable.
Well, thank you, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So let's get to it. I want to go right to the beginning. I know you've built a portfolio that's large. You did it fast. And when I say large, we're talking like 40, almost 50 million, right?
Yeah, 47 million. Yep.
Nice. Let's just start at the beginning. Like it's, you're on the same path I was, the residential. I want to get to all the stuff, the scale, the speed. But the why is so important, man. What was the light bulb that you could even get there? Let's go back to the beginning, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, not at all. So my husband and I started our real estate firm at 18 and bought our first house at 18. And we worked with an agent who didn't want to let us negotiate. And by the time we're done with this interview, you'll know exactly why I was so heavy pushing on negotiation. It's my personality. And when we finished, my husband, who was a corporate manager at PetSmart, we're laying in bed, I don't know, 2, 3 weeks later, and he goes, "You know what? I could do it better." I'm like, "What do you mean you could do it better?" He's like, "I could do real estate better. This looks easy." And he quit his job 2.5, 3 weeks into buying our first house and got his license. And I said, "Well, if you're going to do it, I'm going to do it. You're not going to do it without me." So within a couple of months, we were both licensed and we were working for one of those companies that was doing both the real estate and the financing, which, back in early 2006, that was just ripe for fraud. So I won't go down that rabbit hole, but we very, very early on started doing a lot of very unique things. So we were the exclusive listing company for salebyowner.com, owners.com, doing hundreds of flat fee listings back before anyone even knew what they were. We were doing all the BPOs and short sales for Ameriquest and Countrywide before they imploded. So here we are, 18 and 19, doing hundreds and hundreds of transactions and being sent to appraise all these properties, which were really in the middle of what would have been considered trying to save a foreclosure, right? So those programs didn't really exist yet, but that's essentially what was happening. And being asked to value properties at absolutely unreasonable amounts. And so what we saw happening was this hyperinflation of these loans. And we started working with investors day one. We just kind of threw into our lap. We happened to be in one of the growing markets, which is where our model grew from. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But we saw the opportunity that was happening. And it just so happened that our listings we were getting nonstop were investment potential. And so we just got thrown into it. So we're doing all these BPOs, we're doing all these short sales, we're doing all these listings for flat fee, and people are upside down. They paid way too much. They had all these rates that were adjusting, and it was very obvious to both of us, even as young adults, something was very, very wrong. And our investors were doing these loans called Purchase Plus, which, if you don't remember that or if you weren't in the business at that point in time, basically what happened is there was a bunch of banks that were doing loans where they would lend you the 80%, they'd lend you the second loan at 20%, and then they'd give you an extra 3 to 5% for closing costs. So these investors were walking in and getting money back at closing to buy these properties. And it was just an absolute nightmare. But it was legal. It's what people were doing. And we looked at this and thought, something is going to crash. Something is not right. Michael had one client, I'll never forget, my husband, who worked at McDonald's and tried to say he made $100,000 a year. And we said, "You know what? We're not going to help you. You're going to need to find another agent, one of these stated income loans." And here we are, young and green and still
It
very, very.
must have been the tips.
It was
He was
crazy,
making
right?
tips at McDonald's, right?
Yeah, and they couldn't understand why we didn't want our name on that, but it was really obvious what was happening. So what we did is we started placing our investors on highway expansion. Michael started pulling maps, started looking at where land had been purchased, where land was being purchased, even looking at some of the areas that had to be excluded because of species that lived in those areas where the creek beds were, and figured out where he thought some of the turnpike expansions here in North Texas were going to go. And we hit the nail on the head. We started selling those areas, and knock on wood, I never had a client lose money. And so we just kind of built the model from there. And And we spent the next really 10, 11 years making our clients a lot of money. We represented about 1,400 investors by the time we started heavy investing. We had multiple companies operating, but we were making great money. We just weren't buying real estate. So one day we're up at the casino in Oklahoma that's like an hour away. And the reason we loved going up there is because our cell phones didn't work. And if you've ever done property management for thousands of properties, the one thing that you want is quiet and you just can't get it anywhere. So we were up there one night and on our way back. And I said, you know, if we took the time and effort that we did to go on date nights to buy real estate and did what we were already doing for everybody else, we'd be making a killing. And that's exactly what we did. So end of 2016, early 2017, we bought four single family homes in the markets that we focus in. And I'll talk about that model in a minute. So we bought two brand new construction, two pre-owned that just needed light work, very, very easy. And then about 2 months later, we went and bought a 6-unit apartment complex and a 4-unit fourplex, and all of those in North Texas. And we already had bought one property in Florida that was a beach property that was a great value as well. So we had at that point seven properties, two of which were multifamily. And it just kind of exploded from there. The first four, I sold two of them in a year and a half, doubled my money, sold the fourplex, and I tenfolded my money. I sold everything except for that 6-unit, which I still own today because my husband refuses to get rid of it. But we essentially doubled the portfolio in less than 2 years. And meanwhile, obviously, we were still buying and still buying. So end of 2016, we started with those seven properties, and we are here today in early 2015, and we just hit 47 million. So and I think the really incredible thing about all of that is if I were to actually look at the amount of money that I have in all of my properties, so meaning how much of my original cash is in there that I haven't gotten back through cash outs and all those things that you can do as a real estate investor, it's probably the same amount of money I started with originally. So it's pretty incredible the power of real estate and doing the model the way that we have.
Yeah,
And you
that's a
know,
powerful statement. I want people to absorb that, because when you talk about the amount of years as well, that's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, there probably hasn't been a year where we've pulled out less than a million equity in properties. And my average LTV is still extremely low. So it's people get so fixated on cash flow. And don't get me wrong, cash flow is very important. I teach this. I was on stages with thousands of people in audiences with people talking about buying at zero caps, that appreciation was going to carry the day. Don't worry about your cash flow. And it blew my mind that anyone would be up there speaking that, these gurus telling people to buy with no cash flow. But it's not the most important thing. You know, you look at a traditional rental, your cash flow is going to be what, 6, 7, 8% cash on cash return. Just your principal pay down on a traditional 20% down mortgage is another 5% cash on cash. So you usually can almost match your cash flow with principal pay down. But then on top of that, the things that people don't think about are the tax benefits, the appreciation. And then when you throw leveraging into the mix and you look at, well, okay, instead of paying cash for one house, I can leverage into four and have four growing and four appreciating and four depreciating, it becomes exponential. And so that's exactly what we did, and that's exactly what we do. So in the beginning, we were selling properties to keep going. And when we work with investors, one of the first things we talk about is, well, what do you have to start with? What is the nest egg that you're starting with today? And the model is designed around, and what we have done from day one is to take that money as far as we can. And so it's really important that you're in a market that not only has cash flow, but also has price growth. I see so many people make the mistake of looking at these linear markets. And when I say linear market, I'll break it down really basic. What that means is values don't rise. And so they invest in these linear markets because on paper they look fantastic. But in reality and actuality, what that means is it's a market that's stagnant. It doesn't have growth. These are traditionally areas that are not landlord friendly. They're the ones that have the crazy laws you hear about on the news and the evictions that you can't do in the cold and all these other things. So we have to sue for a security deposit to take it. There's just so many variables. But the bottom line you need to understand is if you buy a property that's not going up in value, you are going to be stuck in that property until the end of days. Instead of buying a property that goes up in value, that is going to pay for your next property, and then that's going to pay for two more, and those two are going to pay for four, and four for eight, and so on and so on. And that is the power of buying in a market like what we've done to build our portfolio.
Well, that's where Texas has so many positive attributes. There's no doubt about that. Every time I look at the Texas market, it's a green light.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people say to me, "Well, Florida's the same. Florida looks the same." And I would argue with that because there are other markets that have historically grown in price, but there are markets that are a lot more volatile. So, when I'm teaching or when I'm speaking, one of the things I do is put up a pie chart of diversity of jobs here in North Texas. And then I put the same pie chart up for one of these small little suburbs that we work in, and they're almost identical. They're completely diverse. There's no one sector that holds the majority of the jobs here. And that's really truly the problem. When you look at most other markets, North Texas is very unique. I'd like to say we're insulated, and we're insulated because we're not dependent. We're not dependent on oil and gas. We're not dependent on tourism. You just throw a dart on a dartboard and there's a different industry. And really, I think where they lose sight is they look at a very short-term period of time. So what I mean by that is 2020, 2021, even going back to 2019, no one could lose money. Multifamily is one of the big areas where we saw this. You have all these operators and all these people that made their big names right through COVID because you literally could not lose money. I mean, you would have to try really hard to lose money. So they're out there selling and teaching and talking about the money they made during this period of time. And what I caution people and what I'll caution you here is when you're looking at a market, when you're looking at a model, you have to look at a bigger track record. You need to look at what it did in the worst times, not what it's done in the best. So when you historically look at real estate, of the last 81 years, all but 7 years have been significantly positive. There's no other investment vehicle that's going to give you that security, certainly not stocks, certainly not bonds. It's really the only investment vehicle where you can borrow someone else's money to buy it, and then you can make appreciation and gains on the entire value, not just your part that you put in. So it's really an incredible thing. But if you don't buy in a market that has that stable, then what you risk is the next time we have a recession or we have a market drop or we have a contentious presidency or whatever it's going to be, you are completely beholden to what that market's history is. And I think that that is one of the biggest takeaways that I've learned, and I've been blessed enough to really understand from living and working here in North Texas, being raised here too. I'm born and raised. Is its diversity and that insulation that diversity brings is really hard to find anywhere else. Now, what else gives insulation? Having more jobs than people to work them, having massive influx, having a low cost of living, all things that North Texas also offers that is really unique. So we're the fourth largest metro in the United States. A lot of people don't realize that. In the next few years, we're going to overtake Chicago for number three. What people really don't understand is the fact that by 2100, we're slated to overtake both LA and New York to be the largest metro in the United States. Now, why is that important? If you look at every other top 10 metro, the price point is double or triple what we are. Our average home price is still under $400,000. So, what does that say to me as an investor? What has it said to me for many years? Well, number one, it tells me that we're undervalued. And the reason that we're undervalued is because we have a lot of space, we have a lot of land. We have the second largest number of highway miles per capita in the entire country, which means that we can live and work further, and that opens up more space for us to live, which means prices are artificially lower. On top of that, we don't grow inside our city. Dallas, the city of Dallas, is actually having net population loss, even though DFW is the fastest growing metro in the United States. And so, what that means for us as investors is we don't have to invest in the expensive and crime-ridden inner cities. We are focusing on titrary outgrowing markets that are smaller, but they're massive. Grayson County, for example, one of the chip manufacturing centers of the entire country, soon to be the world, has $36 billion pumping in right now to an area of 50,000 people. Absolutely incredible. Well, we saw this opportunity coming 8 years ago and started heavy investing there and doing the same for our investors. So it's about understanding the trends, but also being in the right market where you've got all of these metrics that work together to give you a lot of protection. So when we came into this election and everyone's talking recession and rates went high, we were out there doing the same thing that we'd always done because we knew we would be fine on the back end of it.
Yeah, man, you always deliver. Like I said from the beginning, the depth and the scope is real. The research is there, the data points are there. Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, I want to back up for just a second because I want to make people acutely aware of the fact that you have the investment portfolio, you have your personal portfolio. They're two separate, they're different things. But what I want to key in on, because some people are going to want to replicate, is especially at such a young age, because this is something that I struggled with when I started my first firm. How did you know how to set the structure up properly to bring on your investors, especially when you hadn't, like you'd barely bought your own properties at that point, right? And that structure is incredibly important.
So I will tell you that we were very different from your average 18-year-old. I started my first company at 12. I was building websites for the symphony orchestra and doing computer design. At 15, we were an original seller on Amazon. I graduated 2 years early. I went to a fantastic school that gave me a great education. I met Michael, my husband, when we were kids and we're middle school sweethearts, and we were both just done with school, ready to move on. He was already working full time. We are not the norm. As my kids tell me all the time, I have four adopted kids, three grown, and I have a little 5-year-old. And my big ones tell me all the time, we're not like you, mom. We're not like you, dad. But I think part of it was just we were very unique. We were heavy readers. We really always thought through everything that we did. I always try to be 5 or 6 steps ahead of where I need to be. And again, we got thrown in very early into a just incredible opportunity through everything that we were doing to see probably times 500 what other people were seeing, right? So there were a lot of people seeing bad loans and seeing, listings that were sitting and all these signs, but we were seeing it by the hundreds. I mean, there were days where we were doing 10 or 15 BPOs in a day in North Texas. So I think we just kind of came up with it. And I know that's probably not the answer that's helpful to everybody listening, but that's really the truth. We got in February of 06. It was a very unique time. It was right at the cusp before things really went crazy. And it's just one of those things that just kind of fell into our lap and it just made sense. Now, from the model perspective, one of the things that we did really different that set us apart that I thought was really integral to everything we did was treating every rental property like it was about to be sold. And I didn't see that in the marketplace. And I didn't know at the time it wasn't in the marketplace until people started calling me saying, you can't do it for this price and offer this. You're no way you're making money, number one. But number two, we can't afford to do this. I literally had other property managers calling me, big firms trying to buy us because they didn't like what we were doing. So we started out charging dirt cheap on property management, doing quarterly visits at every single property we managed and holding tenants accountable during the lease. So in a time where people were throwing in refrigerators and lawn care, and pest control and all these things for tenants, and then only visiting when there was a repair or a move in and move out, we came in and said, well, no way. We want to show these properties while the tenants still live there. We want to be able to sell it while the tenant still lives there so we can turn it in, do a 1031, and double the portfolio. And in order to do that, we have to be checking on these properties during the tenancy. Foreign concept. Well, when we started doing that back in 06, no one was doing it, at least no one that I'm aware of. We coined it a walkthrough. We started marketing it. We didn't charge for it. But most importantly, it allowed us to catch things very early. So we talk about things like foundation issues and, tenants having dogs that pee on the carpet, having trampolines in the backyard that can void insurance coverage. We came up with a list of things. And back in the early days, I was doing them myself. I had keys and I would walk to every house. I knew my tenants. And every 3 months, I showed up at their house. I walked through the property. I brought air filters with me. If they hadn't changed it, I did it and I billed them for it. Everything that we could do to protect the integrity of the property. And then when we were doing these properties, renovating them, or, a lot of them we went directly to builders, which now about 99% of what we do is direct off market from builders. But we put in features of properties and quality products that were going to outlive the tenancy. So what that means is we don't do any carpet in our properties. We do vinyl wood flooring. We were doing solid wood counters and cabinets. We were doing, granite or quartz. We were doing, big, nice showers instead of plastic sheets. We were using custom tile, still cheap stuff. I mean, you can do this stuff for almost the same price, but people weren't thinking that way. They were thinking, oh, I can save $300 or $400 doing carpet instead of vinyl, not thinking about, well, at move out, I'm going to spend that $300 or $400 to clean it. And our vinyl is getting us 10 years. So it was just a mind shift in how we were doing things and kind of turning the property management model into something new while not charging for it. And I think at our height, we were about 2,400 properties individually owned. And it's very different when you come at things from a property management mindset because you are looking at the entire picture. And then the other thing that we did, instead of having an account manager for each property, where one person has to be knowledgeable in all facets of property management, we put people departmentalized. So I have one person that does nothing but write listings. I have one person that does nothing but go to eviction court. I have 10 people who do nothing but run repairs. Everybody was a specialist in what they did. And so it allowed us to tackle a lot more things than what most people could do. So all of that said, there were a lot of pieces that kind of fell into place in that 2006 to 2008 period of time. And so by the time the market started collapsing, A, my people and we were positioned in great markets where the needle didn't move much. And that goes back to looking at the trends of what has been happening in these markets beyond just 2020 to 2022, where everyone was making money. But also we were insulated. And so I think at that point, it really became clear to us that you have to insulate in everything that you do. So what do I mean by that? Don't take loans that are going to adjust in a period of time where you're still going to own the property. Buy properties in areas that have to keep growing. They have to have more grocery stores and schools because they have so many people coming in. You go buy in the heart of Dallas, it could stop growing today and still sustain the people that are there. The markets that we're working in, they physically don't have enough of stuff, just literal stuff, grocery stores, schools, shopping, all these things that they want. You want to make sure you're buying near a highway so that you know that area is going to be expanding. You want to make sure that you're buying in an area where you're not more than 60% renters. You want to buy in an area where you have city services that can continue to grow. If they don't have enough water rights, then that area is not going to continue to grow because they can't support more new construction. Like there's so many things that you think of, but the bottom line is insulation. How can you protect yourself? Even something as simple as don't put all your properties in one market. You love North Texas. I love North Texas. I'm invested in probably 30 different suburbs. So it's a way of insulating myself within the market itself. So what I would challenge you to do as an investor when you're trying to figure out what model you're going to do or how you're going to build your portfolio is think of every way you can protect yourself and do it. Something simple, I do $3 a month per property. I carry service line coverage on every older property. So if I have a water line or a gas line or something break in the yard, I have a $500 deductible and they pay for the entire repair. So there's just so many little things if you're out there paying attention and you're listening and you're learning that you're going to find that are going to make a fundamental difference in your investment journey. And so for me, yes, we have our primary real estate firm and investment firm, but and we have our renovation company, we have our real estate investment fund. We've got a lot of pieces moving at a time where my time is spent is making those calls, finding those programs, and then being out there giving free education to people, teaching them how we do it.
Yeah. Treating each and every property as if it's ready to sell. What did those leases look like? Were those month to month immediately, or how did you swing that and how did you entice tenants?
So one of the things that we started doing very early on was no multi-year leases. That was a big thing in our market, doing multi-year leases. And what we found is that you can't raise rents. You're locked into a tenant. Just because a tenant pays doesn't make them a good tenant. And certainly when you're doing walkthroughs, you identify a lot of stuff, you know, whether it's tenants doing drugs in a property, whether it's, you know, letting a boyfriend stay there that's not supposed to be there, hiding an extra dog. There's so many things that can come up. Sometimes you want to get rid of a tenant without having to evict a tenant. And having shorter leases allow you to do that. So one thing we did is we tier all our leases to prime season because typically when we put a property on the market, whether it's for rent or for sale, we want it during prime season. So I'm going to call that March to August, but really we're talking April to July. So we tier all of our properties to that time period. Doesn't matter when you buy it. So if you buy it in November, all that means is you're going to do a 16 or 18 month lease. So very, very easy to take any property you acquire or you come into and put it into the model. And after we tier everything to prime season, what we do is we put in a 2 month re-renting period. So what that means is the last 60 days of every lease, we have the right to bring prospective tenants in, put a lockbox on the door and show it like a traditional property. But in our lease, it actually says that if it goes for sale, not for lease, but for sale, we can show it anytime we want. And this is actually part of the standard TAR lease here, the promulgated lease in Texas. We just override a couple areas and modify them. But a lot of the provisions that we use, even the walkthroughs, being able to come in with no notice, is a product of being in a state that is so landlord friendly that we don't have to do a whole lot. It's not that the leases didn't allow these things to be done, it's that companies and property managers were not doing them. And I would venture to say most of them probably still aren't. And you know, candidly, it's very, very expensive to do everything that we do. I have a team of about 49 people. And so it's a volume thing. I can afford to do what we do. And it certainly helps me in my own portfolio as well because I have so many people. If you're a shop of 50 clients and you have 100 doors, you're not going to be able to offer everything that we're offering. What we did is we knew in the growth phase there were going to be a few years that we were going to go negative to get to the point we wanted to go to, but we believed in the model, we believed in the pricing, and we had those growing pains very early on. And by 2012, we were at almost 2,000 doors, so within 5.5 years. So again, it's about providing something that's going to insulate the properties, insulate the clients, insulate yourselves, and having something that's unique, whether you're doing it for yourself, whether you're doing it for someone else, you want to do the best that you can possibly do and find a way to be able to provide that. And we were able to do that, and we were very fortunate. And so now here we are on the backside. We manage a lot of property. We've been very, very fortunate, and we've been able to pump a lot of that back into buying real estate and doing a lot of other things that are passion projects for us. But it's the model is what it all boils down to. If you are using the right model and you're in the right market, you're going to do very, very well. I think where people get they get attached to a property instead of to the model in the area. So when I'm talking to clients and we give them 15 off-market properties and they're like, "Well, which one would you pick?" My answer is, it doesn't matter. They all fit the model. They all fit the area. They all fit the criteria. Pick the one that has the best return. And I think that is a fundamental issue people have is they get so fixated on the property that they forget that there's a lot of things that have to come before that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I love how you've drilled down on all the data points and you've explored your model to the point where you know it inside and out. And I implore everybody that wants to get in to know that that's the level. Like we're looking at someone that's built the template. And we appreciate you for that. Like that's something if you know where you're going, it's easier to get there. And I would point at your model.
What I would tell people is, so again, I have a young child at home, and we've been working on mazes with him. And you get those activity books, and they love it. And you're trying to teach them. And what I find is, when a kid's doing a maze, the first thing you want them to look at is, where am I starting and where am I ending? Because it's so much easier to find the path there if you know where you want to end up. And I think people, what happens, I'll tell you a lot, is they watch HGTV, they see people going and doing these flips, and they're like, "Oh, I can do this. This is easy." And then they take it step by step, and they don't actually think about where they're going to end up and what that process is going to look like. And they think it's easy. Nothing that makes money is easy. Certainly not things that make great money unless you're an inventor or you have some crazy idea, right? And even that's not easy. But when we're talking about real estate, it is never as simple as you think it is. And so again, you have to start at bare basics, know where you're going, but lay out your path to get there. What type of loan are you going to get? How long is that loan going to last? What's your plan going to be when that loan is up? Another big mistake I see people make is they go get 30-year fixed mortgages, but it doesn't make sense to hold a property for 30 years. Every year you own a property, your return is plummeting because you have more equity in the property, meaning you're making less return for the actual cash you have in a deal. And by the way, all of your equity is your cash too. So every year that return is plummeting. And by owning it for 5 or 6 years, it's cut in half, usually, if not more. And there's a disparagement, right? So rents rise at an average of about 3%, and value rises at about an average of 5 to 6%. So every year you're losing 2 to 3%. And so the longer you hold, the more your repair costs are going to be because that brand new renovated property is no longer brand new and renovated in 3 to 4 years. You've got property taxes going up. We have a lot of benefits in the beginning, especially in our state when you buy new construction or remodeled homes, that the property taxes are pretty far behind, but they catch up eventually. And so there's a lot of reasons why you have to turn over your portfolio. If nothing else, you're going to double the portfolio and double all those benefits of real estate, right? Depreciation, appreciation, principal, pay down, cash flow, those four big ticket items. But I think what happens is people get so fixated on, "I need a 30-year mortgage. I need a 30-year mortgage." And so one of the first things that we do is we tell people, no, don't pay for a 30-year fixed. Go to a 7-year fixed because generally you're going to be able to sell in 2 to 6 years. That's what our model teaches. And so by going into a 7-year, you've got that insulation. You've got plenty of time to plan. If there's a presidency change with someone who wants to raise taxes and you think it's going to affect interest rates or whatever the situation may be, and the rate is significantly lower. We don't do 30-year mortgages because they just don't make sense. But if you go out there and listen to all the gurus, what are they all preaching? Go do hard money and then exit and do a 30-year. So again, it just goes back to upfront, come up with what your model's going to be in every way that you can protect and insulate yourself, then write your path to follow your maze to get to wherever you're trying to go.
Yeah, 100%. Do you have a formula as far as when to flip and when to hold, or when and how you're going to refi?
So I never flip. I don't believe in flipping. It doesn't make sense to pay taxes on your income. I don't pay any taxes because I have so much depreciation. I've worked really, really hard to get there. And people don't realize how easy it is in real estate if you're a real estate professional to get enough depreciation to wipe away taxes on income. It's really not that difficult. Every average price point a house is going to take $7,200 of depreciation a year. So $200,000 basis, that's 7,272 a year. You got 10 houses, that's 72,000 of income that just disappears. So it's really, really important that you understand the benefit of holding for at least a year and a day so that you can do a 1031 exchange. Now, the reason why people typically flip are two things. One, they don't have enough cash to buy property and keep going, or two, they think that they're going to make more money quickly. What I would encourage you to do is buy a property, renovate it so you have equity at the end. If you don't have money to go buy traditionally following our model, then what you can do is go refinance that property, pull your cash back out to use on the next one and the next one and the next one. And that's early on in my career. That's what I did. We were buying 30, 35 a year doing renovations. And so I think people think that if you only have X amount of cash, that there's only one way to do it, and that's flipping, and that's just not true. The key is finding properties that have enough equity to make that model work in the beginning. Now, is that model more work? Is there more risk? Absolutely. But no risk, no reward. And certainly, if you're trying to build something and you don't have the cash to do it otherwise, that to me is the one and only way to do it right. And so, all the time, I give you an example. I bought a property that funded this morning. I bought it for $123,000. It's a 2007 build in the heart of Sherman, which is like chip manufacturing corridor of the US right now. 123, putting 20,000 in it. I'll be in it for 143. It's worth about 200,000. So if I were to do that model, traditionally cash out that property at 200,000, put, cash it out to 80%, I'm going to have a loan of 160 on that. I'm actually going to make money on that transaction. I could take it to 75%, still make money on that transaction. So not only get my original money back, but have more money left over. Now, I'm not doing that anymore, but if I were, that would be a perfect example. And so you might think, well, you have special connections because you know people in these areas and you're well connected. This was an MLS deal. I got it on MLS. You could have found it on realtor.com. And I did it on a holiday weekend where nobody was looking because they were all too busy celebrating Valentine's Day and everything else. And so I got the deal. And, I think a lot of people think that you have to have money and have connections to make money. And that's just not true.
Yeah. And I want to back up just for a second because we glazed over something. You mentioned the term real estate professional, and I want people to understand the tax implications on that. Do you mind digging into that?
Not at all. So, number one goal I make for any investor I'm working with is to get real estate professional status. What that means is that your active income, which is going to be your W-2 job or whatever you do to pay your bills, that is going to be able to have the depreciation from your real estate applied against it. So, what that means is your losses on your passive investments, your real estate rentals, will be able to apply against your active income to reduce your tax burden. But there are some requirements for that. So, it's about 15 hours a week that you have to work in real estate and at least 50% of your time. Now, a lot of my clients are 1099, and so they can easily make that happen, or maybe the husband works and the wife stays at home. So there's a lot of ways to finagle that. But the bottom line is that if you are not a real estate professional and you are investing in real estate, you need to get with a great CPA and figure out a plan to get that status, because it takes where, so that $7,200 number that I used, right? If you are not a real estate professional and you have a full-time W-2 job, that's going to be a carry forward loss only against your passive income. So your real estate income or whatever other passive investments you have, instead of being able to actually apply it against your W-2 or your full-time income. So for someone like me, I have millions in depreciation every year because of straight line, right? You can do the math, assume basis of whatever the value of a property is. And my number, I'm using 200,000 as an example. That's where that $7,200 comes from. And then on top of that, there's this opportunity with cost segregation. And if you're not familiar with that, what that essentially means is, so let me back up. A single family home is depreciated over 27 and a half years. So $200,000 home divided by 27 and a half years, that's your $7,272. Cost segregation is a principle that basically says that not everything in a house depreciates over 27 and a half years. Some things wear out faster, appliances, flooring, examples like that. So then it's going to take a percentage of the house on what's called a cost segregation study. I use a company called KBKG. They have a self-service portal online. It's just a few hundred dollars. You can fill it out in an hour, and you're going to get a cost segregation report. And it takes all of the items that can be accelerated faster, that are going to wear out faster, and lets you accelerate that depreciation even quicker. Typically, what I see is about 28 to 30% of that basis of a property. So that 200,000, somewhere around 55 to 60,000 of that is accelerated, meaning it's something that that would wear out faster. So there's 15-year, there's 5-year, and that allows you to take all of that up front. So if I were to go take a $200,000 home and I were to go cost segregate it today, let's say it's 30%, that'd be $60,000 I could write off today. Well, then there's the percentage each year, and I'm hoping that Trump's going to re-up it back to 100%. But if you were to buy a property this year, it would be 40%. Last year it would be 60. So now we're going to take 40% of that 60,000. So we're talking about $24,000 that I could write off right now on that house. And so that is instead of that $7,200 figure. So once you get real estate professional status, you can accelerate your depreciation. And that's important because in the beginning, I have a lot of clients who they make $100,000, $150,000. Well, they're not going to buy enough property. They're not going to buy 15 properties year one to be able to get all of that income depreciated. So they can cost segregate three or four, wipe away their taxes on the income for that year. And then as they build up the portfolio over time, eventually they have enough regular depreciation on that 27 and a half year straight line that they're never going to pay taxes again. The caveat is you're going to sell and rebuy at least every 27 and a half years, but don't keep your property that long. 2 to 6 years is the sweet spot, but depreciation is an incredible tool. And again, this is one of those things I mentioned in the beginning that is far more valuable than cash flow that people just don't realize.
Incredibly well said. All right, let's flip over to the investment side. So I pick up the phone, I call you, I've got X amount, whether it's, I don't know if there's a benchmark there, but what's the onboarding process look like? What are my expectations? What unpack that as I'm coming on as a new client.
Yeah, so on our real estate firm side, we have an investments and acquisition and sales team that basically all they do is work with investors. And what we do is we act like a glorified buyer's agent. Now, we have access to property that's not on market. We have tons of builders that build product for us. And because of our longevity and our relationships and all those things, we get access to builders that don't sell to investors. It's great. We have about 150 properties available every single month, 99% new construction. What happens is you're going to have a DocuSign agreement that is a buyer rep agreement, like what you would do with any buyer's agent, but it's a little different because there's also a non-compete piece of that, which basically says you cannot distribute, you cannot talk about, you cannot share our list. It's completely proprietary and only you have access. And once you do that, you start getting properties from us every single day. We have a custom investor portal, we do flyers, but we also do an intake process where we're going to learn about you, what you're looking to do, what we think is going to fit you best, and then we're going to send you the properties that fit what we think is best for your investment journey. And it's a really simple process. We do tours twice a month. We do big bus tours. We do private tours 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And we really just give you all the information at your fingertips to make decisions. Probably 90% of our clients never visit. They do it all virtual. We work with people all over the world. We have lenders that have very specific, unique programs for our model specifically to work with our clients. They're not, you can't call me from Nebraska and say, hey, I want to buy a property. Can I use this program? It doesn't work that way. But that's that 7-year fixed price. Product. It's still 30-year amortized, absolutely incredible rates. But we have foreign national lending, we have DSCR LLC lending, we've got guidance lines, we've got all sorts of stuff that we can offer you through our partners. But it's designed to be a passive feel. So if you've ever invested in like an apartment syndication or some type of passive investment, our whole model is designed around, and even the model that I operate with is designed around a passive feel while having all the benefits of active control and active ownership. Well, what are those benefits? Well, A, you're doing single family, which is very, very hard to do in a fund. We did a single family investment fund, and that's like unheard of. In addition to that, you're in complete control over what you're going to do. So whether you sell it, you refinance it, you cash it out, 1031 it, whatever you're going to do, you are in control. And speaking of 1031s, when you own it individually, you can 1031 it. If you're in a group investment, all of the people in that investment have to agree to 1031 and it has to go back into that group. So when we talk about not doing flips because of the tax implications, these syndicated type investments, it's the same issue. That income, when you finally do sell, all of that is subject to tax. So active ownership is really, really important, and it also gives you the ability to exit. And one of the benefits of single family is there's lots of ways to exit. There's lots of ways to use it. You know, a lot of people buy single family and do short-term rentals. You can do something like midterm rentals. You can do long-term rentals. You can move into it if you decide to move here, which sounds crazy, but it happens all the time. The benefit of single family is not just that it's affordable. It's also that it has so many protections, again, to insulate you. There's that word again. And that's really what the model's designed around. But by having professional property management, by having brand new construction with builder and home warranties, by having quarterly walkthroughs, by having Class A finish out properties attracting Class A tenants, we can do all of the things that we can do to mitigate the risk to, again, insulate you to make it feel as passive as possible. And so every time the lease is up for renewal, we are approaching our investors, telling them what the market is doing, whether it's time to start considering a sell. And we have a team that does nothing but the investment acquisitions, and then another side that does the sales side. So we really handhold through everything. We're family owned and operated. And then personally, I also operate a mentorship program. It's like a one-on-one. We call it our elite program, where people that really want to get started, they want to move very quickly. We like them to have at least $100,000 to do that. And that's a small group with small group meetups and just a lot of benefits to that too. We do mastermind events, we do live events, tons of free education. The goal is in everything that I do to give you the information to go do it yourself, but to give you an avenue where we can help you do it as well.
That's amazing. Yeah, the educational side is paramount because people have to know what they're doing. And even if they're working with you, they have to understand the questions that they're answering.
Yeah, and you have to understand that there are so many people operating in this space who maybe they were a traditional buyer's agent and they didn't have enough business, or they operate in a market like ours where it's really easy to slap that investment specialist on your name and go do it, but they don't own any investment property. There are so many people that are investment specialists and they live in an apartment that they rent. I would tell you, wherever you're working, whoever you're working with, make sure that they are doing the model that they are selling you on. Really, really important, because if they don't have their money on the line to understand what that feels like, they're going to have a really hard time making good decisions for you and yours. And I think that's a paramount part of any partnership that you're going to have with anyone you're working with. If you're working with a lender on investments, that needs to be a lender who believes in investing. Whether you're working with an insurance agent, don't just go to somebody who all they write is homeowner occupancy policies. Go to a program that is designed for real estate investors, like the service line coverage that I mentioned earlier. There are so many things that you can partner with people on to get you a better experience, better pricing, better product, better opportunity, and to know what questions you need to be asking that you might not know yourself. So for me, it's not about teaching you how just to do it in my market. It's about giving you the information that wherever you go, wherever you are, you know what questions to ask and you know how to interpret numbers. I had a customer schedule a consult call with me, which I do all day, every day, all week. And they sent me a pro forma from a provider in another state, brand new construction that they were sent to buy this property. And she said, "I know something's wrong with this pro forma, but I can't figure it out. Can you tell me what's wrong? It looks too good to be true." So I looked at it, and red flag number one was that they said this property in the middle of just a very non-growth, a linear market, was going to be worth double in 10 years. But what really stood out to me is there was no increase in insurance over 10 years, no increase in property taxes over 10 years, even including the beginning of ownership where it's property tax at, you know, land-only value, no
Magnet.
repair underwriting. Yeah, no repair underwriting, no vacancy underwriting. And so I tore it apart. I absolutely tore it apart. Like, when you get one of our pro formas, we are so detailed. We even write in a factor of what the leasing fee to place a tenant is every 30 months into the monthly. Like, we try to be as transparent as we can be, because I don't want you calling me after the fact, like, "Hey, you said it was going to do X and it did Y." Like, we want to be as careful as we can be. But I tore this pro forma apart. And this customer who had been watching my webinars, she knew enough to know something was wrong, but she couldn't identify what it was, and she knew to go ask. And I think that that is something that we can all strive to achieve for the people that we're trying to help. Even if we're not the one answering the question, even if you're not coming to me for a consult to get that answer, if something feels wrong, it usually is.
Yeah, that's great advice. Hey, you touched on something I wanted to back up. All the types of loans, you know, you touched on DSCR. Let's kind of dive into the pros and cons and what you really like and don't like, just because there are options and I think people are either overwhelmed with options or they don't realize that there are any.
I think the biggest problem people make is thinking that you can only have 10 doors. You know, there's this old adage, oh, Fannie Mae, I can only have 10 doors and then I have to go to really expensive commercial financing. Not true. So, like, for example, this 7-year product that we use direct with the bank, there's no 10-door limit. It's not Fannie Mae. It feels like Fannie Mae. So I'll back up even further. Fannie Mae is conventional lending. So when you hear this 10-door rule, we're talking Fannie Mae conventional lending. I don't use Fannie Mae. I don't recommend Fannie Mae. The only time that we have clients go Fannie Mae is when one of our builders is offering a lender incentivized rate, which we do get often in the fives and sometimes in the low sixes right now. In that case, we're going to go Fannie Mae because it makes sense. But other than that, we are going direct bank product. DSCR is something that if you are an investor and you don't have income, you can't qualify. DSCR is really your only option. Now, the caveat to that is if you are a high net worth individual, you have a lot of cash, maybe you have investments, you have cash, anything like that, you can go to a direct bank and do a loan without having income. We do that all the time. But if you don't have assets and you don't have cash, that's where DSCR is going to come into play. And essentially, what that means is they're going to look at how the property performs and not look at you. But because they're not really looking at you, that means it's going to be a little bit more expensive. So it's very rare that we actually use DSCR. The problem with DSCR is it's expensive in terms of its upfront cost, but the rate is also a little bit higher. What we do is we work with direct banks that have different options depending on what your situation is. So if you can qualify, you have income, we're going to put you with our 7-year, 30-year AM product. If you are someone that you maybe need to have it in an LLC because you already have a ton of properties and you want it insulated in an LLC upfront, you don't want to transfer it after closing, then we might put you in a guidance line or LLC lending through one of our direct banks. Still, we're not dabbling into DSCR yet. So there's so many different options, but the bottom line is that this old 10-door adage you need to just forget from your mind, because if you're going Fannie Mae, it's only because you haven't found a bank with a better product yet. Very, very rare that we're going to put someone with Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae also charges you. There's a hit if you put less than 25% down, significant rate increase with only 20% down. If you're going to cash out, they're going to limit you to 75% instead of 80. There's a lot of different reasons why Fannie Mae is a negative, but one of the biggest of which is what happened during COVID with the CARES Act. And if you're not familiar with that, we don't have enough time to go into all the issues with it. But basically, if you had a Fannie Mae backed mortgage, they told you who and how you could evict. And that's a major, major issue. I don't want anyone telling me how to handle my tenants that don't pay. And although I'm hopeful we're never going to have a situation like that again, I think there's been precedents now that they've done it once. They could certainly try to do it again. There are some of the inner cities that we avoid, like Dallas and Houston, that did programs over and above that to make it even more difficult. There's a reason we invest in the areas we do, and we avoid the others. And it's just really, really important again that you insulate and protect yourself. So if you can have a loan type that's not going to be some type of partnership or government-backed product where the government's going to step in and tell you what to do, that's always going to be a better option. So DSCR is this qualifying the property only. Another thing people don't understand is you can close one of these properties in your personal name and then deed it over to your LLC after closing. Most loan programs now allow that. A few years ago, it used to be that you couldn't do that with Fannie Mae or you risked what's called a due on sale clause. If you've watched some webinars, I'm sure you've been scared to death about triggering the due on sale clause where they can call the loan due. They can't do that anymore. So if you have a Fannie Mae loan, you can deed it to your LLC. It doesn't trigger that clause. It doesn't exist. Same thing for the banks that we work with. Most of them allow you to deed it to the LLC after closing. The benefit of having it in your personal name is you're going to get better terms. You're going to get a better rate. You're going to get a better amortization schedule. So until you have a portfolio where asset preservation and protection is the most important thing, I definitely recommend doing it in your personal name. What I tell people, and I did an interview about this a few days ago, it is so much more important to spend a little bit of money on better insurance and an umbrella policy than it is to worry about having an LLC up front, because that LLC is going to give you a lot less protection than a great insurance policy, and it's going to cost a whole lot more. Every LLC, you're doing taxes, you're doing filings, you're doing accounting. It's not just as simple as, hey, I'm going to make an LLC and that's it. There's a lot of pieces that come with that. So I would encourage you, think about how am I going to insulate myself the easiest, the cheapest, and the most kind of broad, and that's insurance.
Yeah. Nice. Now, almost everything you guys are doing is one entity, one property. There's like not syndication. Is that correct?
I do have one real estate investment fund, but it is closed. We do one owner to one property, but we do all sorts of properties. We do new construction fourplexes, single family duplexes. Sometimes we get little small multi communities. We like everything to be like a single family. So if we do a multi type project, we want it to be treated like single family, meaning that we can make the tenants responsible for all of the maintenance costs. So pest control, lawn care, all those things that we don't want owners having to pay for. So even when we build our townhome style fourplexes and duplexes and stuff, we want it individually metered. We want tenants responsible for everything so that the owner's cost of ownership does not change. So we have a lot of different opportunities that we work in, but we're not doing pooled investments. One of the issues I have with pooled investments is you have to really know your operator and you have to really trust your operator. And doing that in the single family space, as I mentioned earlier, is very, very difficult to find. And people like me generally are too busy to be doing things like that. So I did one because I wanted to give an opportunity to people that don't have the time or ability to do that active investing. And it's possible we'll do another one. That one went fantastic, but it's not on the radar right now.
Understood. So once again, if I come to you with 100,000, it sounds like not only do I get your expertise and guidance and mentorship on the front side, but also the back side as far as like best time to get out, tax incentives. Can we talk about like we kind of touched on what it's like to get in. What's the how do you handle your clients in that middle ground day to day? And then as they exit, what's that look like?
Yeah, so because we're all under one roof, it's all one company, the property management, the acquisitions and sales, all of it's in one place. So the entire team specialize in this model. So they're handholding you through every step. So when we get to the point that we're under property management, that's where we're doing all those things to protect the asset, the quarterly walkthroughs, making sure that we're swiftly dealing with tenants that don't pay or cause damages, all those things. And then, of course, if the tenant gives notice to vacate or you give notice to vacate, we're marketing and showing it while the tenant is still there. Every time we have a lease up for renewal, we're going to approach you and say, hey, the market's really hot. We should look at selling. And then if you decide, okay, let's look at that, then we're going to tell you what we think it would sell for. And if you decide to move forward, then we're going to do that for sale while the tenant is still in place. And so we're going to show and market it. And one of two things happens. We can either give tenant notice for the end of the lease, or we let it go month to month while we show it and hope the tenant doesn't give notice. And once we get a contract, we can give the tenant notice at that time. So once we get to that point where you have a contract on that property, then we're going to help facilitate the 1031 for you. We're going to connect you with the attorney that we use to do them. By the way, be really careful with your 1031s. They are not regulated. There's no licensing. It's one of the biggest loopholes I think that we need to close in terms of our laws. Anyone can be a 1031 intermediary. My rule is I will only use someone who's a licensed attorney so that I have some type of degree or a federal fund or state fund to go back to hold accountable. So I only use licensed attorneys. So we will refer you to the one we recommend. You're also welcome to use your own. At closing, to do a 1031, that money has to go get held with the intermediary. You cannot touch that money. Now, if you want to take some money out, it's called a boot. You can do that. You'll pay taxes on your boot. And that's something that we can talk through the pros and cons with you as well. But the bottom line is that that money then is going to sit in that 1031 fund to be used for reinvestment. So then you're back with our investment sales and acquisitions team working back through property. And we want to make sure that you don't sign up for new property until your old one is at the funding table. That way, you're not on the hook for something that could fall through. Hopefully you're never going to have a transaction fall through while it's under contract, but it certainly could happen. So people get really excited when they get a contract and they start shopping. And I always tell them that's great to shop, but don't plan to buy until that money is in hand, meaning at the intermediary. So again, we're handholding you through that whole process. It's all under one roof. We are facilitating connecting you with these companies. We're going to remind you when you need to file your tax protest to get your property tax bills down. We're going to remind you when to shop your insurance. And we're going to tell you, hey, you need to go take a look at this. We're going to remind you when you need to file things. We're going to remind you when we need to go check your chimneys, when you need to check your roofs from hail damage, all these different things. So we are really proactive in everything that we do. And that's just kind of part of what we offer. But the one thing I will say is we don't take take any kickbacks or fees from the people that we refer you to. And that's really, really important to say, because in my state, when you're working with a licensee, so if we refer you to an insurance company, or we refer you to a lender, or we refer you to someone, we want to do it because they do a really, really good job. So when I refer you to these lenders, when I refer you to the, intermediary, all these things, we're not getting kickbacks. We're not having you sign documents that we're being paid referral fees on this, because we're not. Could we? Absolutely. But I don't believe in that. So it's really important that when you're working with someone, that they're referring people to you for the right reason, because it's what they believe is the best fit for you. And so the vendors and the people that we tell our clients to go to are the same ones that we're using in our own portfolios.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for a more integrous model. That's
We try. We try.
that's amazing. And I really want to draw attention to the people that are watching. When we're talking about a one-stop shop where there's so much value, there's handholding, there's any question that could possibly answered, as you can even see in this interview, it's right there, and it's due to 17, 20 years of experience, which is incredibly valuable. So, hey, I know we're pushing time. I do want to ask you one more thing before we go. I know that there's a ton of stuff that's always coming up in Texas, tax incentives, what's going on legally. What's Texas look like moving forward in the next year, 5 years?
I think one of the best things that we have working right now is this massive push to get rid of property taxes. We did a rate compression package 2 years ago. So if you don't know what rate compression is, what that means is our governor basically said we are going to buy down the property tax rate with our surplus, because Texas has so much extra money, by buying down the school tax rate. And so that's exactly what they did. And then when they went back into session just a few months ago, he said, this is number one priority. We want to get property taxes down again. They only used like 40, 35% of our surplus. So there's so much money left. And Texas is just so wealthy. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I believe in our lifetime, we'll end property taxes and go to a consumption tax, which is great for investors because you're not really consuming here. But certainly we've had massive strides downward in property taxes, and we're about to have another package pass again. So in these packages, to be clear, they don't just affect homeowners that live in their homes at homestead, they affect investors as well. And that's just unbelievable. It's unheard of. So there's a big push for that. And then we love Southern Oklahoma right over the border. I invest tons there. I just bought 42 townhomes over the Southern Oklahoma border. And it's fantastic because they're getting rid of state income tax, and he wants to start pushing property taxes down, and property taxes are already low. So there's a lot of competition between Oklahoma, Florida, and Texas right now, and it's benefiting everybody. Of course, Florida just came out and said that they want to get rid of property taxes completely as well. So all of us are trying to bring all these people here. We're winning, by the way, but we're all trying to bring people here. And property taxes are a big thing. Now, we don't have a state income tax, which is great, but property taxes, people artificially think makes the numbers not look as good. But very, very excited to see what we're working on here. And of course, the protections that we're putting in place to make sure it stays that way, like the laws that were signed into effect to make sure that we don't have a state income tax come up in the future. So just very exciting things with growth. And the other thing I'll touch on is Texas did its own CHIPS Act. So the nationwide, there's a CHIPS Act, and a lot of that money's funneling into North Texas. But Texas also said, well, we're going to go above and beyond that and incentivize them even more. And it's a lot of money, a lot of money, a lot of just kind of attention and pushing to try to get these businesses here. We've already seen a lot of them come in. Texas Instruments, Globotech, those are both building up in Sherman right now. And I'm just excited to see what that brings, because the Texas CHIPS Act money and most of the nationwide CHIPS Act has not actually happened yet. They basically made the act, and then they had to identify the areas that were actually these chip hubs, and that took a while to name the hub. So now that Texoma has been named a hub, now we're starting to see that money funnel in. So most of the growth that we've been teaching about and talking about, this $36 billion, was all without CHIPS Act money. So imagine what happens once that money is at play.
Yeah, it's coming. Nice. Well, hey, before we go, is there anything that you want to put a spotlight on that you know the viewers, we covered a lot. So, if it's something that you want to circle back on or something that we didn't touch on yet, just let me know.
The biggest thing that I would tell you, and what I will leave you with,
Yeah.
instead of plugging, let me teach you something. I find that people don't make goals. And I know that sounds really silly, but when we're kids and we make vision boards and they say, you know, you're getting ready to go to college or whatever you're doing with your life, like, where do you want to go? What do you want to be? I feel like we get to adulthood and we think about that when it comes to what new model phone we want or what TV show we want to watch, but we don't think about it from our financial future. I would encourage you every year, sit down and make goals for yourself. I would love to see you also make a path to get to those goals, but at a minimum, dream. You need to dream and dream big because we are all capable of accomplishing so much more than I think what we often think we are financially. We think that our job or our lack of money or our maybe health or so many things that can hold us back. But I can tell you that anyone can do this. It is not hard. It does not take a massive income. Anyone can do it. Just find the model that's going to work for you and run with it, but run with it with insulation. Be safe. But it starts with goals and it starts with planning. And so if you don't have any idea what to do, you don't have any idea where to start. Start with goals. When I do my consult calls, that's one of the first things I talk about with people is what is your why? Why are you doing this? What are you saving for? What is your goal? Because once we know what you're trying to do, once you know what you're trying to do, you're going to be better armed and better prepared to make that happen for yourself.
Nice knowledge. I love it. All right. Well, hey, we really appreciate your time. Appreciate the all the gold nuggets. And if there's anything we can do for you, just reach out, let us know. But besides that, we're signing off.
Awesome. Thanks so
Thanks,
much.
Leah. Really appreciate it. Take
Bye
care.
for now.